So welcome, everybody, to the Atom Ventures podcast. This podcast is a little bit different to the normal one that I usually give because this is one I'm going to be involved in as much as my guests today. And today we'll be talking about DeFacto, which is a new project we're all going to be working on, which is launching in the next few weeks. And to help me describe what DeFacto is, I have the CEO, Ernesto Vila. I have the CEO, Alejandro Gutierrez. Please forgive my Spanish pronunciation there. And we have Adam Buktila, who's working again alongside us, giving us as a blockchain advisor. So hello, guys.
Hey, Vito. Thank you for having us.
Hey, Vito.
So Ernesto, you're the CEO of this new group that we've created. So can you tell people a little bit about your background and what DeFacto is?
Sure. I am currently the CEO of Consul Freight. My background is in logistics and trade finance. And at Consul Freight, we're one of the first companies bringing real world assets into the DeFi space in terms of trade finance. So we're kind of bringing in the physical flow of goods mixed with the financial and data flow on trade finance.
Alejandro, you're obviously working alongside Ernesto at the moment with at Consul Freight. So this idea was born from your experience at Consul Freight. So can you tell us a little bit about what you do, Consul Freight and DeFacto, and what you think DeFacto brings to the table? What makes DeFacto different?
Definitely. So when we started in Consul Freight, we have this idea of digitizing the logistic industry and digitizing or providing some technical education to the freight forwarders. And quickly we realized that even though there is a big problem on digitization of that industry, one of the main issues that they have is the procurement of liquidity. And not just for the freight forwarders, but actually for the clients of the freight forwarders. And that's when we came to the conclusion that if we actually match both components, right, the logistics and the financial side or the procurement liquidity together, you're going to be able to collateralize assets that you are transporting and get financial services like trade finance based on those goods, right, that are being transported. So we came across a concept that we call it trade forward and start knocking on doors, right, of traditional finance institutions just to back this idea. And it was extremely difficult. Lucky enough, we came across DeFi and we started just making partnership with some of the big hitters in this space. And what we realize is even though there is a good opportunity for as originators like us to just tap into this new market, it's extremely difficult to be able to scale operations using DeFi, right? Because it's a new technology and because the UI UX is not there yet, right? So there are multiple components that are really tricky to handle. And that's, I think, the idea behind DeFacto, right? Trying to help as originators to get a hold into this DeFi boom, help themselves to just get a new source of liquidity, right? But doing it in a way that can be scaling it up. Because what I'm kind of afraid is that because of the boom, there are going to be a lot of as originators jumping into it. However, when they realize all the hard work that is required to be able to scale it, they're going to be just coming out as quickly as they jump into it just because they were on the hype, right? So I think it's kind of open the doors for everybody that wants to tap in this space and give them the tools, right? And the opportunity to just be successful in the DeFi.
Yeah, so I was going to say that I think the way I look at it is that we're almost, in a sense, pulling the plug out of the DeFi liquidity pools and letting that liquidity run into the traditional market, because as we're working with you guys to build technology around the decentralized, the DeFi space, what you realize quite quickly is if you're a normal company or a smaller player, it's very hard for you to enter. There's great barriers of entry into the market. And unless you have a tech team on hand and you are technically adept already, it's going to be very hard for you to find financing. And so you're stuck in a situation where if you're looking for traditional finance, banks aren't lending because of just generally they haven't been lending for many years, and in many markets they're not even operating in lending. And if you're trying to get into the DeFi space, you need technology, you need someone who can help you navigate that whole ecosystem, and that's where DeFacto comes in and simplifies all of that for for asset originators, so people who have things to sell or are able to, who've got assets out there that they can leverage. So I know, Adam, just to bring you in, I know that we've been talking a lot of jargon at the moment. So can you quickly explain a little bit about decentralized finance, what it is to people who maybe aren't quite familiar? And what do you find exciting about this project, given that you've seen other projects out there on the blockchain and have worked with a number of other companies that are trying to do not necessarily what we do, but are trying to unlock DeFi?
Sure. Well, a little bit of background. We've been involved in the blockchain digital asset space now for 3 to 4 years, I guess. So we've been involved in a number of projects. I think what excites me in particular about DeFactor is that it's not just your typical kind of crypto project, right? It's bridging the real world. It's taking asset originators and, as we said, kind of lowering that barrier to entry. Like, from speaking with Console Freight and some other teams in the industry, sometimes it can take months to get onboarded to some of these DeFi protocols. And I suppose to explain the jargon a little bit, when we talk about DeFi, we talk about decentralized finance. And that's essentially where you have financial instruments without any central intermediaries. So these could be loan providers. These could be basically any type of financial service without your traditional intermediary in the middle. So spread all around the world.
So Ernesto, question for you now. We've all come together because we've seen a need in the market and a problem to solve. So from your perspective, you know, who is this platform benefiting and what will they get out of it?
Sure. Well, like pretty much we all agree that DeFi has lower the barriers of entry into the financial markets. However, there's new barriers. There are the handling of crypto assets and blockchain, which is difficult. So fundamentally, DeFactor is trying to service that, right? Providing the access to liquidity or financial services to real companies that originate receivables every single day. And at the same time, for them entering into the DeFi is difficult because, like you said, technically speaking, it's difficult. So DeFactor is trying to create a user-friendly interface that everybody can transact their seamless. And that's the whole purpose, right? To service companies in the real world doing transactions every single day. And at the same time, liquidity providers who are people or companies that are expecting a return on their capital, and it should be safe. So what we're building is precisely that, the ecosystem where we can build securities for everybody to participate in and lower the barriers of entry at every level, just to democratize it. Yeah.
I guess the thing to emphasize there is the safety piece, right? Because I think one of the things that you find within the DeFi space at the moment is it's very unclear what you're putting your money into. And it's not necessarily, there's not huge amounts of visibility and transparency in there. And what this platform is looking to do is add that layer of transparency and visibility and risk in so that people know when they're putting their money in, what they're putting their money into.
That is correct. So yeah, among that, but what we're trying to build is a risk framework that we can price assets correctly, and at the same time provide an insurance layer in case defaults. And I'm sure Alejandro can expand into that greatly.
Yeah. So I think. Sorry about it. I think the idea behind that concept is at the moment, usually when transactions are happening, so it's trust built between individuals. Right. Well, we want to just kind of change that concept and make the system to be the holder of the trust, that when the parties come into the table, like they trust the system and they can actually just transact without any resistance in a way, right? Because the system is the one that is building the trust, not the individuals. So it doesn't matter which individual is sitting at each side of the table, like the system is going to just be fair and trust individuals at the same level and just dictate if, for example, transactions have worked or not to pull through it because the risk is too high or the risk is actually can be mitigated, providing benefits to all the parties involved in transactions, right?
So yeah, I think what we can do here now, take the opportunity to break down how the actual platform will work. And so I can talk a little bit about that. And that what we'll be doing is onboarding asset originators and performing KYC validations, AML validations on those asset originators. And providing with an onboarding process that will essentially streamline their onboarding to liquidity pools further down the line. But also when they're bringing deals to the table, we'll get to analyze those deals. And as you say, Alejandro, will actually be able to understand the risk of those deals and provide that information onwards to investors so that they then have clarity on what those risks are. And ultimately what we'll be doing is rewarding good asset originators. So asset originators will be incentivized in order to be to put in good deals. And obviously those who are bad actors will be punished. And so what we're trying to do is, as you say, let the system generate that level of trust and transparency that people not only understand what they're investing in, but asset originators really get a good feel of what the market wants and what kind of deals they should be putting onto the table. Which brings me a little bit back to you, Adam, because you mentioned that we're not a typical crypto business. So what did you mean by that?
Sure, sure. So when you talk around these decentralized finance projects, or I guess any decentralized project in general, so the governance is a key element. It's how are decisions going to get made? Who's going to signal and support kind of changes on things like we talked about, risk assessment frameworks, credit policies, etc. So I guess in order to do that, you would have a governance token. And think of this as just a unit of measure, something for you to be able to kind of place your weight behind a certain decision to say, hey, I think we should, for example, expand into new territories, or I think we should start to add new team members. Holders of a governance token will be able to signal and make those changes. And I guess that's the key to these projects is eventually you want them to be community owned and community driven. So effectively you have people from all around the world being stakeholders in not only, I guess, the success of the project, but also the direction of the project as well. Going back to what I said, I suppose not your typical crypto project. You're seeing a lot of DeFi projects, decentralized finance spring up, and it's all centered around kind of very high yield in the cryptocurrency world. So I'll stake one type of cryptocurrency and then I'll get another type of cryptocurrency back. And a lot of the times it's very susceptible to market volatility. And yes, as you mentioned, Bhairav, sometimes you don't quite know exactly what you're getting. I think what the factor is different, as I alluded to earlier, is it's actually connecting real world assets, real world asset originators. And because it's built on the blockchain, you're able to get that transparency throughout the individual layers. So you can say, there's this asset originator. They seem like a good actor because I've got full visibility over their trading history, whether they submitted good deals to the platform or not. And bringing it back, I suppose, full circle to that governance token, that will also be key to each of those modules too. Because as the actors or as the asset originators perform, I guess, positive contributions on the network, they will also earn a stake of this governance token. So I suppose the more involved the partners are, the more of a say they actually get to have in the overall network.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things I'm seeing is when you look at a number of the other companies that are coming onto into the DeFi space, you see a lot around, say, stocks or venture capital or bonds. And one thing that we're doing, which is very different, is helping people we know that need help, right? So we know asset originators need help in the real world now, and we're bringing this help to them through the DeFi space. And it's not just trade finance. We can do things like loans, we can do other types of assets, properties, etc., through this platform. So the roadmap is quite big, and we'll get onto that a little bit later. But for now, Ernesto, if you're talking to the investors out there as CEO, what's your message to them? Why should they look to invest and put some money behind DeFactor?
Multiple, right? So initially, if they're investing on a pool for, you know, provide liquidity, we, at least in the trade finance, which is the initial, asset remuneration that we have, we're over collateralizing these assets, or these loans, by holding, the physical assets as collateral plus the bill of exchange. So it's essentially secure. On top of that, we're providing an insurance policy to cover any kind of default. And then, of course, a yield on their investment, which is what everybody's looking for. Banks are not paying any interest. Pretty much people need to pay banks to hold their money. So a yield that is secure and is scalable is what we are aiming to provide to investors.
So, Alejandro, do you see that we have any competitors?
It's a good question, actually. For what I'm seeing, no, and I'll explain you why. because I don't think there are many people that probably understand the real problems of companies going through the process of being onboarded to DeFi, right? So it's interesting what you were mentioning previously about, and Adam as well, mentioning about all these DeFi space surrounded by putting crypto assets and getting returns on or dividends on crypto, right? However, the crypto space, but it's limited. It's what is the market cap now? I think it's 1 trillion or 2 trillion or something like that.
It's north of 2 trillion now. Yeah,
north of 2 trillion. So what happens, like, if you want to just keep creating, right, or expanding that market, you need to go to the real world. And that's the reason why we're seeing companies like Maker, for example, that are like heavily putting effort to bring real world assets in order to just be collateralized and decreasing as well, like components with fluctuation on DAI, right? That's kind of the main reason, because the more assets you are bringing that are like a tangible, that are like a real world, you're going to have less issues with those, especially with DAI that is soft pay, right? So going back to your question, that's kind of an introduction of it. There are not many companies at the moment that have realized about it. However, the more these big players are going into or pushing for real world assets to be part of their ecosystems, more of these real world accelerators are going to be jumping into the space, right? So that's the reason why at the moment, like, I don't see any real competitor. However, we might be probably the vehicle for all these real world assets to join that DeFi revolution. And I think that's kind of the key from the project, because it's kind of providing that enabler for people that in the traditional finance space to just move into the DeFi space, or even new businesses, right, that are just have a concept and they want to just prove it on the DeFi space.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, you know, I, having worked at Aztec and dealing with supply chain finance since 2013, when I was nearing the end of my time with that business back in 2016-17, and blockchain was just taking off, we were hitting the IDO craze, ICO craze back then, we were looking at how we could integrate blockchain technology with the financing that we were doing. And it was difficult then. There was only, I think, the first letter of credit had been financed in 2015 as an experiment, and you had the Marco Polo, Ripple obviously had kicked off, and Marco Polo is still around, but all of those were very closed networks. They were very, very closed networks. And so if you were a normal supplier, so a normal company, smaller business, which were the ones that we at Aztec were trying to deliver finance to, it was impossible for them to get money. And currently, if you are, let's say, the Marco Polo network, if you have to be a FTSE 250 500 business in order to get money from there and have a bank that's a part of the network already, which is kind of defeats the purpose, really. And what we're trying to do is democratize that, which is the whole point of blockchain, really, is a mass democratization of finance in the DeFi world.
Exactly. And I think to your point, Bayrav, the tech is starting to catch up now. And if you're looking at the explosion of DeFi, I think as of today, numbers could be slightly off, but I think there's over $75 billion locked in DeFi protocols around the world. So the liquidity is really, really growing. That's up from, I think it was at 600 million a couple of years ago. So, I mean, the growth is just crazy. But I think when speaking with Alejandro and Ernesto, that still pales in comparison, thinking about, you know, some of the gaps that are out there, even in the trade finance world. Alejandro, maybe my numbers are off, but I think, what is it? It's a $1.3 trillion credit gap in emerging markets.
Correct. And that's, like, that's pre-COVID, right?
Yeah.
That's pre-COVID. Now,
pre-COVID.
They're estimating that after COVID, it will be in the market of $5 to $6 trillion. And one of the main reasons is because all the big players in this space, either they have call dramatically the services trade finance, or they have completely just withdrawn from the space. And you have all the big, like, Amro Bank, AB Amro Bank, you have Legionalitat, you have Rabobank cut dramatically as well, ING, like all the big players that have been just fueling kind of trade around the world, they are not there anymore. And the reason is because the risk is too high for them due to the fact on how they do or how they conduct a risk assessment, right? The risk assessment doesn't take into consideration the physical flow of the supply chain. That at the end of the day is the goods. And if you don't have any control over the goods, you are going always to have risk, especially with fraud. So that's exactly what Ernesto mentioned in the beginning of the conversation, right?
And to touch on your point with regarding technology, Adam, I think when we were looking at it back 5-6 years ago, it was was light years ahead of where we were. So obviously there are going to be technical challenges with what we need to do, but the underlying blockchain technology is much more mature. And from our perspective, from a DeFacto perspective, you know, from a trade finance perspective, we built these systems a number of times over. And obviously with people like yourselves, EOS Dublin on board with us, we have the great blockchain advisors that can help us navigate these waters. So I think we're in a very, very strong position with our industry knowledge, our kind of sector knowledge, our tech knowledge to build this and get it done right. So final questions as coming into the last set of questions. Ernesto, we touched a little bit on other types of financing. So we spent a lot of time talking about trade finance and obviously supply chain finance, and this is what your core business is at the moment. But where do you see the future? What excites you about going forwards with the factor?
Well, real estate, for example, right? So this is a very market to address. So there is a lot of people in the crypto world that have made fortunes on crypto. I'm talking about Bitcoin, for example. And people don't want to sell those assets because taxation and the exponential future growth. What we're planning to do is be able to collateralize real estate purchases through crypto assets, where people make regular payments with fiat into a loan that are backed by the property and crypto assets. So people that they don't have to sell their precious crypto assets. So that is in a space that I see to grow globally. It doesn't have to be only United States, because there's a lot of development in the United States, but the rest of the world is pretty much left behind in that space.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you look at the amount of construction going on in places like Brazil at the moment, right? There's huge amounts in Brazil, Colombia. It's fantastic. Right. And this is where liquidity is needed, right? It's where the money is all you need.
Exactly. I think bridging the physical assets with the digital asset world is something we're going to see a lot in the future. So this is tokenization or fractional ownership of things like real estate. But also now what we're seeing, the explosion, I guess, in the non-fungible token world or the NFT world, people are starting to really see, well, that has application and use cases far beyond just, you know, $60 million JPEGs. I think there's a lot that can be done, be it in contracts, be it in invoices, budgets, these are things that can be represented using NFTs. And I think you're starting to see companies and big brands start to take notice. So I think the future is bright for NFT technology. And that's something that we're definitely going to be incorporating at DeFacto.
It's funny because I saw a thing on Twitter. I saw this thing on Twitter the other day, Alejandro, where it was a developer who said all Silicon Valley developers in the know think that blockchain is still a joke. And I think what you've just said there, Adam, you know, I think that some of the NFT work that's happening, people do feel that it is, but what we're trying to do is show that actually it's not, right? There are real world applications.
You know, it's hilarious that you guys are mentioning that, because like I was having a chat with someone not long ago in the financial business. I was explaining like, okay, so tell me about NFTs and stuff like that. So I was explaining, hey, we have been using NFTs since we started in ConsolFreight to actually digitize assets. So we have been using this since we start business model. And it's like, but can you use it for something different than actually art and tokenizing songs? And it's like, yeah, definitely. There are a lot of different scenarios in which you can use it for financial services in a secure way. So I was explaining about like digitization of invoices or digitization of bill of ladings and some other things. And he was like, Jesus Christ, I had never heard of that. I said, because usually what you are hearing is, I just haven't mentioned, right? The 60 million JPEG or the first Twitter from the CEO or the co-founder of Twitter and these examples that, they're interesting, right? But It's not my substance on it.
Well, I think there's just not much longevity on something like that. Just people paying $2 million for a tweet. And having said that, I think the NFT technology does have massive implications for the art and the music world, but it's going to be projects with substance. It's going to be people who are taking the technology and then bringing it to the next level. I mentioned before kind of bridging physical and digital. So you'll start to see people using NFTs as tickets, start to see them using them as access passes, because fundamentally the technology allows for, you know, you can, for example, an artist or somebody can say, hey, come to five of my shows and you'll get something. And by the nature of NFTs, you'll be able to very effectively track that. But bringing it more into the de facto world, into the financial services, you're, as I mentioned, you're starting to see whether it's invoices, but also contracts and agreements. And let's say, for example, you have a multi-party arrangement. You can capture all of that, all of the details and parameters of the deal actually into an NFT. And the only way you can update the deal is if you do a multi-sig. So three out of four of us will have to agree in order to make a change happen. Sorry, I can ramble for a long time on NFTs, but I think that the future's bright.
So just to close things off at the moment, does anyone have any final words, Ernesto, Alejandro? And for the investors out there, people looking and interested in putting some money in, can we announce any of the partners that we've got lined up?
Definitely. Centrifuge is one of our early partners that provide liquidity and infrastructure to tokenize assets. So we've been working with them at Consul Freight, and they're definitely expanding into working with DeFactor as a key partner. So love to, you know, keep with us, but look us up and follow ups in all social media. We're going to be announcing a lot of new partnerships. I know there's more in the pipeline, Alejandro.
Yeah, that's correct. We have some more coming soon, and we'll be announcing it as quickly as we can get info and details about it.
So when is the public sale happening?
Well, I believe that we're scheduled to do a public sale in July. So we had an oversold pre-seed. It was amazing. So I think we're going to be moving rather quickly on a seed round that should be probably towards the end of May, and those are the next rounds coming up. But public sale, it looks like it'll be somewhere in the summer.
Perfect. Well, thanks for that, guys. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Renner.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Thanks, Barab.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you like what you hear, then please subscribe. We're the Atom Ventures podcast, and you can find us on Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, all the great podcasting sites. Please also leave a review, and if you want to get in contact, then please visit our site, atomcto.com. You can find us on LinkedIn under Atom Ventures and Atom CTO, and you can email us at info@atomcto.com.